It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
Okay, hello again, everybody, and welcome. It is the Patrick Johnson Show here on 94.3 The Game. And we're streaming 94.3thegame.com, also the IBX Media app, which is free for download on Google Play and the App Store. You can also keep up with our video on YouTube, 94.3 The Game YouTube channel, the Facebook page, and Twitter, or X, where we stream the video portion of the show live every afternoon here. Philip, the ref Pilkington, continues to be out. We have the great Dom Kosolke is on the ones and twos today. Kosolke, what's new? Are you good? I have some Kosolke news.
Kosolke news? Let's hear it.
Well, it's your news, so I think you should tell it. But we were talking before the show went on, and I'm leaving, and Dom's going to host the rest of the hour. No, Dom is going to return as the announcer voice for the Tarboro, don't tell me, River Bandits.
Yeah, you had it. You got it right.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pumped. It was really fun last year, and I heard that some listeners kind of, you know, vice versa between this show and also Tarboro, because Tarboro's not too far away, so it's...
We get into Tarboro with our signal over the air.
I remember some sports updates. I didn't even realize that Tarboro, you talked about Tarboro. I was like, dang, and you didn't even know I was until after I told you after a while, and then you were a supporter after that. I
not a hater. Not a hater. I was a supporter.
Always a supporter, so I appreciate it.
Well, I think it is... Pretty good. You're going to be back doing that this year. And that will mean Dom will be hanging around here some, so we'll hear from him at times throughout the course of the summer. Dom's producing this week and doing a fine job. Today we've got Jonathan Wagner with us. Wags, friend of the show, friend of the station, of course, an alum of Hoist the Colors, now with On3.com and On3 Sports. We're going to talk Pirate Baseball with him coming up in a little bit. Other piece of ECU news to get to, and you can go to Hoist the Colors to check out these stories. ECU offensive line transfer from Houston is Carson Jones. So the Pirates pluck one out of the portal. He announced his commitment to ECU Monday, and Jones will have 3 years of eligibility remaining, 6'4", 305. Visited ECU Thursday through Friday before heading to Western Michigan on an official visit. He committed to the Pirates on Monday. Had offers from UMass, Sam Houston State, Old Dominion, and several FCS programs. He was originally, or he was recruited by Matt Maddox, the former Cougars football alumnus himself. So there you go. Jones is from Lubbock, Texas, 3-star recruit out of high school, and selected Houston. Did appear in a couple of games last year as an interior lineman on the second team. Also today got the word that Ezra Czar is actually going to, this was the Corey Smith from Pack Pride reporting that Ezra Czar was going to visit NC State today on an official visit. The portal closes tomorrow. New legislation, of course, was passed last week by the NCAA. It's kind of added a sense of urgency to the closing of the men's and women's transfer windows for all transfers in all sports, even grad transfers. Now, they all need to be in the portal by the close of their sports windows. And for many, that is tomorrow, May 1st. Previously, graduate transfers didn't have to adhere to the transfer window dates and could enter the portal at any time. That is what happened with Cam Spencer leaving Rutgers and going to UConn, and of course the Huskies won their second straight national title. Transfer legislation last week included the elimination of the graduate transfer exception, and that has caught players and coaches a little bit by surprise. The new rule, approved by the Division I Board of Directors, applies to all sports effective immediately. The transfer portal for men and women closing Wednesday. That is tomorrow, and that could lead to a flood of names entering the portal before then. So you could see some names tonight that may be jumping in there. As of late last week, this is just basketball. There were 1,900 Division I men's basketball players in the portal. Again, this is just hoops. 1,300 Division I women's basketball players had entered the portal. So if you run into a college coach today, especially if you run into a football coach or a basketball coach today, they're going to be a little uptight because the portal closes tomorrow. The big news overnight, and this is being described interestingly as deep discussions. Pete Thamel was one of the first to report this. But apparently college leaders are getting closer to sharing revenue with athletes. The discussion's being held to reach a legal settlement that would likely lay out a framework for sharing revenue with athletes in a future NCAA business model. Right now, the NCAA and its power conferences are defendants in an antitrust class action lawsuit, which argues that the association is breaking federal law by placing any restrictions on how athletes make money from selling the rights to their name, image, and likeness. If the plaintiffs win at trial, the NCAA and its schools could be liable for more than $4 billion in damages. That is the crux of the matter. That's the meat of the matter, Dom Kosolke. They do not want to pay, does the NCAA and the member institutions, especially at the high level, $4 billion. It would be much more affordable for them just to share in the revenue with student athletes. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I think in that lawsuit, you've got some ex-athletes trying to recoup some money. And so there'll have to be something settled with that. But as for the ones in the here and the now, that's kind of what you're looking at. Pete Thamel broke the news, as we mentioned, and Thamel on ESPN Today talking about the structure and how this may work and how it may come about. Hit it.
It gives you a target and essentially a cap for you can have this much money to revenue share. And it's essentially like natural selection for schools and how much they want to spend and what level they want to be committed at to annually pay their rosters. Now, they could pay softball. They, you know, I'm sure at Duke that would be weighted towards basketball. You know, similarly at, you know, Carolina, Syracuse, places, Kansas, obviously, Arizona, places where it's forward. So the fine point details of how that's all chopped up still remains to be seen. But the thought is that there is a percentage of what the average of schools are getting, and then, you know, the Alabama, Ohio State, USC, Texas, etc. That crowd can allot for the maximum. We kind of heard Trev Albert say the quiet part out loud the other day. He said in an interview with the College Station paper, basically, I'm now setting $15 to $20 million in my budget going forward, starting in 2025, for revenue share for athletes. Like that's there. You know, on some campuses, there's an expectation of some form of this coming. Place like A&M obviously would be invested to the highest level. I would think a vast majority of the now Power Four would be invested that way, but it certainly, I don't think, would be all of them.
Well, yeah, it's not going to be. That's the reality. There are certain schools, even in the alleged big boy conferences of the SEC and the Big Ten, maybe less so, but for the most part, they're not going to be able to invest fully in this. And then there's the Title IX component of this, which is really interesting because that you have to put an equal amount of money into women's sports. Yeah, you can weight it towards a certain sport, but if there's a female counterpart, I mean, there's going to be the Title IX element of it. So the example that Thamel gave there, if Duke were to weight it towards basketball, they'd also have to weight it towards women's basketball, I would think, with the Title IX considerations. The case that we talked about, the federal lawsuit where the NCAA and the big conferences are accused of breaking federal law, and again, that's because they've placed restrictions on how athletes can make money from selling their rights to the NIL, the case scheduled to go to court in January of 25, which is really right around the corner in the sense that you got to start with these deep discussions now and make a resolution, have a resolution out of those deep discussions now. If the plaintiffs win at trial, as we told you, the NCAA and its schools could be liable for more than $4 billion in damages. A turning point in the discussions, which have been ongoing, came last week, where the Power Conference commissioners and their general counsels, so the lawyers involved, Charlie Baker, the NCAA president, NCAA lawyers, which that's all they have in the building up there in Indianapolis, are lawyers, and the plaintiffs' attorneys met. College football playoff meetings were taking place in Dallas last week, so that was part of the reason why they did that. Sources stressing there is no deal imminent. Details about what a multi-billion dollar settlement could look like are expected to be shared with campuses, quote, in the near future. You heard what Trev Albert referenced there, 15 to 20 million, and we told you last week that Trev, who was the AD at Nebraska and took the job as the AD of Texas A&M, is cutting a lot of staff members, longtime staff members in athletics, in planning for allocating that money to go into the pot for rev share. And you know A&M is going to go full boat into this, 2 feet forward. It is wild, man. It is totally, totally wild. But that is some of the breaking news overnight. Found out today we're going to have a couple things. We're going to have Mike Houston in studio with us on Monday. So that will be happening. Looking forward to having Coach Houston to talk Pirate football with him, state of the program, and looking forward with some expectations. Also, we're going to have John Gilbert on Tuesday's show before the Duke baseball game with ECU. And that is coming up next week, so a week from today. That'll be the birthday edition of the Patrick Johnson Show, Dom. So go ahead and you can make a check out to cash if you're thinking a gift.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I'll mark my calendar. Mm-hmm. It's a big event, big day. So.
Yeah, big day, big day. Speaking of big, there's a big open house coming up in Greenville on Thursday. And a lot of you have been with me on the weight loss journey for East Carolina Weight Loss. Well, they're going to have an open house from 5 until 7 on Thursday. And I'll be there. John Moore, the mayor, will be there. Other personalities from the radio market will be there. And this will be taking place 5 to 7, East Carolina Weight Loss offices, 504C Red Banks Road in Greenville. Went in today and officially, I'm down 46 pounds officially. Now, if you take me at what was unfortunately my heaviest, it's like a double nickel, but I've lost a Kosulke. I think Dom weighs about 53 pounds or something.
Okay, man. I'm not that skinny now.
No. I was noticing you kind of filled out. You've been hitting the gym?
I've been hitting the gym a lot. The basketball court's closed at ECU. They're redoing them, so I don't have anything else to do with myself.
Well, that was built when I was in school, Dom. So.
Yeah, well, they did say they were worn down, so they should be nice for next year, but I try to keep myself lean playing basketball.
I understand.
But now it's time to work out.
You're getting swole, brother.
Thank you.
Getting swole. So, if you want to find out about East Carolina Weight Loss and how you can have the success that I've had, and this has been since mid-December, right before Christmas, you could go to that event. It's Thursday. It will be, again, at Red Banks Road, location of East Carolina Weight Loss, 504C Red Banks Road in Greenville, kind of across from Talbot's and Kaufman's, catty corner to the Tommy Wash there in Greenville. And you can come out, and there's no obligation, but you can learn more about this. So I hope a lot of folks will show up for that. And you can kind of have an opportunity to have your questions answered. I know a lot of people have asked me questions. If you want the secret to losing weight and getting healthy, and you want to do it without drugs, you want to do it without injections, East Carolina Weight Loss can help you lose that pound of fat naturally, safely, effectively, without counting that pound of fat every day, in fact, without counting calories. You're not counting points. No exercising, although I'll walk for 30 to 40 minutes on the beach now, most every afternoon. And I feel better because I can get up and do it. No prepackaged meals, no drugs, no surgery, no injections. And, you know, I know the shots are kind of in vogue now, but there are, you know, risky side effects with that. I know a couple weeks ago I was talking to someone and they were telling me that they had to get off the shots because the side effects were just too harsh on them. I know someone else nearby here in Washington that was on shots and was just having real health issues and side effects. EastCarolinaWeightLoss.com is where you can go and schedule a free consultation. Many patients lose 20 to 30 pounds in a month or two. Call for your weight loss consultation now. You can do that. Let me give you a phone number. It's 496-3610, 252-496-3610, or online, EastCarolinaWeightLoss.com. That's EastCarolinaWeightLoss.com. Again, mention me, Patrick Johnson. And we will give you an opportunity to find out more at the open house. I'll be there. John Moore will be there. And again, others will be there from 5 until 7 on Thursday for East Carolina Weight Loss. All right, let's hit a break. We'll come back. Jonathan Wagner on 3 Sports. Wags will join us to talk some Pirate baseball on the other side here on the Patrick Johnson Show.
Download the new IVX Media app now and get the show for your ears and eyes.
Doesn't it look great on me?
This is the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
All right, Jonathan Wagner joins us, ECU alum, all-around good guy, Wags, back on the Patrick Johnson Show. Hello, pal. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing real well. Nice of you to join us. Thanks for popping by here today, because I know you're very excited about the Pirate baseball season coming in, and you've got to be elated right now. 5 in most of the polls. I think Baseball America is the lone poll that has ECU 6. And what a year it's been. A little bit of concern with the pitching issues all of a sudden with Root and Lunsford Chinkman being out, and then obviously Jake Hunter. But, you know, Pirates were able to navigate without those other two guys through the game against Memphis, have a week off this week for exams before the Bulls coming up. But, you know, it's been a pretty fun season so far, Jonathan.
Yeah, it has been. I think, you know, throughout a baseball season, I think, you know, you go through your normal ups and downs and frustrations, and this team's no different than that. But when you start out with Trey Savage on Friday nights, I mean, every weekend you have one game where it's must watch. And Zach Root's been like that for most of the season as well. And, you know, offensively, I think, you know, everyone has their thoughts on, you know, Cliff Godwin's style of doing it. And whether that's bunting or his managing and calls in game. And it might drive people crazy sometimes, but right now it's so fun to watch because I think he's hitting all the right buttons at all the right times. And this team is really well-rounded, offensively especially. The pitching staff, it might be a little top-heavy, but at the top, it is elite. So this team is fun. I think they have a lot of potential. And if they get into a postseason, obviously it depends on the matchup. But I think this team definitely has a chance to go on a run. So it's been a very fun season for sure.
Associate Editor, National News Desk for On3 Sports, Jonathan Wagner joins us at J_Wags74 on X is where you can follow him. Hey, Wags, let me ask you a little bit about your Savage. You brought him up. You've seen a lot of the frontline Friday night guys for some of the big time programs. Where does your Savage stack up to fellow number ones at these fellow top 5, top 10 programs?
Man, I mean, he's right there, like honestly. And I know I'm an ECU guy, but bias aside, there's really no arguing against it. I mean, you got your Hagan Smiths at Arkansas, your Chase Burns at Tennessee, and you've got other guys here and there, but I think Trey Savage is right there. I mean, he has to be. And you can consider the level of competition in the American. It isn't as high as some of these guys are facing in the SEC or the ACC or et cetera. But what Trey Savage is doing is unreal. We've seen it against better teams too. He shut down North Carolina. So he's up there, and he's going to be a very high draft pick. And when it's all said and done, I think he's going to be – taken above a lot of those guys that some people might argue above him when it comes to the MLB draft.
Right. Carter Cunningham has had a fantastic season in his senior campaign, and I think he's got to be right now the American Player of the Year. Where do you stack Carter Cunningham up with the year he's having, a dozen home runs and the high average in that race? But also, you know, where does he compare for hitting stars for, again, some of these elite teams that ECU finds himself bunched with?
Yeah, I mean, this lineup is, at the beginning of the year, I think it was a little bit of a question mark. It's, you know, you have Jacob Jenkins-Cowart, you have Jacob Starling, and after that it was like, you have Carter Cunningham, but nobody, I think, expected him to be this good. And if you did, then good for you, but I didn't, and I love Carter Cunningham. I mean, he can truly do it all. Offensively, he can hit for power, hit through the gaps, he works counts, he gets on base through walks, he's got decent speed as well. And defensively, I think he's played a pretty great first base, and that was a big question for me with him coming into the season. How does he transition from the outfield to first base? That's not easy. And I think he's done it very well. Credit to the coaching staff for helping him get ready. But, I mean, his versatility too. We've still seen him go out. We've seen him start games at first, go to left field, go to center field, all maybe sometimes in back-to-back-to-back innings, and he does it all pretty well. So, yeah, Carter Cunningham, he's definitely got to be the player of the year in the American, I think. And, you know, when it comes around the country, I think his name isn't going to get as much, you know, national attention. But,
he may get some All-American second or third team consideration, though, I would think.
Oh, he should. He definitely should. But I think he's definitely in that discussion. And, man, I mean, it's unreal. Like I said, he is for power. He really does everything. And we know ECU likes to put down bunts, and when it comes his time to do that, he does that well too. So
I think that's a requisite. I think you got to be able to lay down a bunt if you're going to be in that lineup, no matter who you are.
I think you're right.
Jonathan Wagner on 3 Sports joining us here on the Patrick Johnson Show, talking Pirate baseball with him. You know, I think what we have seen from Jacob Starling since he came back and returned against NC State and hit for the cycle, first time in 14 years a Pirate player's done that, and then, you know, continued with some really strong performances going yard in the Memphis series and what have you. I think he's got to be a real key. I mean, you alluded to him there. JJC's got to be, you know, fabulous and fantastic. Carter Cunningham, I think, still has to continue to be productive. Riley Johnson's the ultimate table setter, who's reached base in 42 straight games, I think believe the number is. But to me, he is someone that has to be really, really offensively prolific for this team to max out its potential. I'm talking about Starling.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I've talked about it before, but, you know, this team has a lot of good hitters. But, you know, when we're talking about Jacob Starling missing time with an injury, it's like, you know, where are these guys going to play? Colby Wallace looked good at third. Dixon Williams looked good at second. And Dixon Williams on the heater too.
Yeah.
So, you know, when Starling came back, we knew he was going to second. It was just a matter of, you know, where does everyone go? But I think the reason that we knew Starling is going back to second is because, to me, in my opinion, I think his upside is higher than anybody else in this lineup. Because he can hit for power. He's got good speed too when he's healthy. And, I mean, he works count like nobody else. And I just love the way he plays. He gets fired up after big hits. He gets fired up after walks. And, you know, that's the kind of guy I like in my lineup. And, you know, the right-handed hitter versus left-handed hitter balance in the order, I think, is a little bit overrated in conversations to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it does help having that right-handed bat in the middle of the order. You can have Bristol Carter move down. And, you know, I do think that matters. But, man, Starling, if this team is going to go, they do need him. We know he comes through in the big times, the big moments. And we're going to have some big moments coming up. And I think Starling being Starling really adds length and strength to this lineup.
Jonathan Wagner is with us. When you look at, you know, Root and Lunsford Chinkman, and it's kind of a day-to-day thing right now. I mean, they could very well pop up this weekend. I don't know how likely that is right now today, but, you know, they're being evaluated. That is a concern, though, and if Hunter is out for an extended period or even the season, you know, with whatever that injury he suffered was Sunday at Memphis. Those are 150 innings that has been heavily relied on and been really outstanding. Some guys are going to have to step up at the pen, and you know, that has been a little up and down this year, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it's a very big concern to me when I look forward and project. And again, we know we have Trey Savage on Fridays, but after that, it's really a big question mark starting pitching wise. Ethan Norby stepped up, and he's going to have to step up more. I'd like to see him settle into a role, especially now. But you know, if en route, I think he's never pitched this much in his life, and I think we started to see that in the weeks before this past weekend.
Yeah.
And he just maybe didn't look as sharp as he has, which it's going to happen with a young pitcher anyways. But he didn't quite look right. So I was glad that we were able to give him a weekend off, and hopefully that's it. And hopefully he can – well, I'll say this. Hopefully you can get through this weekend without needing either of those guys, being Zach Root or Wyatt Luntz for Chankman.
Yeah.
But obviously that's easier said than done. I'm not on the inside of the coaching staff. I don't know if they're going to come back this weekend or not. But, you know, just looking at it with a long week off – no midweek is, I think, it's really big. It's at the perfect time for this team because I do think guys are worn down, and you lose a lot of versatility with Shankman. Especially, he comes in first guy to the bullpen, he goes 4 or 5 innings and he takes you the rest of the way, or he comes down in the ninth in a high leverage situation and closes it out. He does it all, and both of those guys are elite when they're on. And if this team wants to do what they want to do and go to Omaha, they're going to need both of them. So to me, in the short term, you have to do what it takes to keep them healthy, because it's not worth the long-term risk this season and beyond of rushing them back when they're not ready.
And Cliff Godwin has said as much. Hey, can you hang through the break and we talk about the seeding and kind of where you see things as of today?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Jonathan Wagner with us on 3.com. Covering Pirate baseball and talking Pirate baseball. Right now, Dom Kasulke is going to give you an update. And when we come back, more with Wags on the Patrick Johnson Show.
Thank you, Patrick. College sports leaders are getting closer to sharing revenues with athletes. According to multiple reports, deep discussions are being held to reach a legal settlement that would likely lay out a framework for sharing revenue with athletes in a future NCAA business model. The NCAA and its power conference are defendants in the antitrust class action lawsuit, which argues that the association is breaking federal law by placing any restrictions on how athletes make money from selling the rights to their name, image, or likeness. If the plaintiffs win the trial, the NCAA and its schools could be liable to pay more than $4 billion in damages. ECU is up to number 5 in the D1 baseball poll, but the Pirates may have 3 key pitchers unavailable. Yesterday on 94.3 The Game, Pirate baseball head coach Cliff Godwin addressed the status of lefty starter Zach Root and reliever Wyatt Lunsford-Shanklin.
They're feeling better, but you know, two different things, kind of. I won't go into specifics, but they're both dealing with some arm soreness. But as you guys know, their careers are way more important than us winning a baseball game. But they're getting all the treatment, physical therapy this week. Us having no midweek game is going to be a huge boost in our arm, so to speak.
Jake Hunter, another ECU pitcher, appeared to injure himself when throwing a pitch on Sunday at Memphis, and he will be evaluated and have scans done this week. In some football news, former ECU wideout Zay Jones was released from the Jacksonville Jaguars this morning after 2 years on the team. And the Hurricanes are hoping to punch their ticket to the next round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Carolina's hosting the New York Islanders for Game 5 tonight at PNC Arena. The Canes are coming off a disappointing loss in Game 4 after falling in double overtime. Carolina's still leading the best-of-7 first-round series 3-1. Only 4 teams in NHL history have come back in a series after trailing 3-0. And that's it for your sports update. We'll be right back after this quick break on The Patrick Johnson Show.
Taking the rage out of your drive home.
You just cut me off, but it's no big deal.
Patrick Johnson on 94.3 The Game and the new IBX Media app.
All right, welcome back. We are talking ECU baseball, and let's talk national seeds. And hopefully Coach Godwin's not tuned in during this particular segment. It's one of his favorite things. All right, Jonathan Wagner. On3.com, On3 Sports is with us here. Hey, Wags, let's. I know On3 does their own projections. Baseball America does, D1 Baseball does. Everybody gets gooey britches over the rankings, which, I mean, really are not an indicator of where someone is going to be seated in the tournament as far as the regionals and hosting a super regional go. Right now, it would appear ECU is probably firmly inside the top eight. A lot of baseball still to play, though. What do you see, and what does On3 see?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it a lot, and when I look at ECU, I think, I mean, I see a top eight team. And again, I know I'm biased, or I'm not biased, but, you know, I'm an ECU guy. But to me, when you look at the resumes, there's really no looking away from it. I mean, I think you have your top probably three that are set, A&M, Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky's there, Clemson's there, ECU's there, Florida State's there, and North Carolina's there in that range to round out the top eight. But outside of that top three or four, I think it's wide open. And outside of maybe Oregon State, who has been up and down this season, and I have them currently at nine. I don't see anybody that can really sneak into that top eight, barring something monumental over the last 3 weeks of the regular season.
But you can always fall out. I mean, that's, you know, the thing.
That's true.
You can always – it's a heck of a lot more difficult to climb and stay than it is to, you know, maintain. And, you know, a couple dings against you here and there, and you could fall back. You know, I think it's going to be close. And then, again, you know, I think with those pitchers, that status in question, that's a big – you know, could obviously play a huge factor. And the other thing to me, Jonathan, is, and I think you hit the nail on the head, this is, you really get no credit in the conference because everybody's RPI and what have you is so terrible. Now, you know, you look, as you say, USF, you're at home. If you can get the type of performances you've gotten and everybody's a little rested up, You got to like your chances against the Bulls. That won't be easy. You got to go to Tulane, who's playing 500 baseball in the conference. Rice just knocked off UTSA and got the series win this weekend. So I think they will be fairly formidable in the final home series of the year. So you got that, and then you've got Duke and Campbell, which are huge games. And then next week's the makeup with VCU. From earlier in the year that was rained out, they had those back-to-back games scheduled, and the rain cost the games. They're going to make up one of them. That'll be Wednesday. You can tune in and watch me on ESPN Plus Wags on that one with Mike Mullis. So you can do that and scream at the TV. But my point is there are opportunities ahead of you, but the conference thing really, you just can't stub your toe in this conference, but so much.
Yeah, the margin of error is pretty much zero right now. I mean, all those teams that I mentioned that are in the race, all of them, their remaining series are against other ACC teams, other SEC teams. And I'll give you a hint, all of their RPIs of their future opponents are top 20, top 30, at worst, top 50. And ECU's best case for a weekend is not good. And it becomes a thing to where if you're, let's just say North Carolina, for instance, a 2-1 weekend for them could be enough to move them up. Mm-hmm. For ECU, a 2-1 weekend could be enough to move them out. So it does matter. I think sweeps are must-haves at this point in the year. And it's crazy to say because ECU has been really good. But, yeah, those midweek games are really important now. And I think you can probably go the rest of the way. And I'd say you want to lose. You want to win every one. But if you're going to lose any, I would say – two, when you can probably still feel comfortable. But again, it just depends on, do you lose those midweeks or do you lose on a weekend?
Right.
And how much does your RPI fall as a result?
Well, and you need teams like State and North Carolina, Campbell, Wilmington. I mean, you need those teams to keep winning also. And, you know, that's some stuff that'll certainly help you. Right now, what would you say, again, if this were starting today, that's the one thing about these projections, who would be potentially in the regional? I mean, what caliber of team would be in if you're a top, you know, six or seven type of seed if you're East Carolina?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's interesting when filling it out. And as I had ECU as the sixth overall seed behind A&M, Arkansas, Tennessee, Clemson, and Florida State.
Yep.
ECU was a six. And you know, at that point in that range, you'd think you're not going to get one of the top two seeds in the field. But at the same time, there is the regional aspect. And if the committee can help it, they're probably not going to, you know, send a team cross country if they don't have to.
Right,
so the regional
right.
ties matters as well. And to me, I had ECU with Coastal Carolina as the two, which is a little scary. But Coastal's a weird team. They're a team with a weird resume. They were hosts for me last week, but they went 0-5 last week. So I dropped them out, and I think they're a mid-tier two now. So I had Coastal Carolina. I had Georgia Tech coming from the ACC. I had Wright State. And it's just one of those things. It matters how much the committee is going to value the regional aspect of things. But I'd be surprised if we don't get a Coastal NC State. I think they're going to end up being too high of a two seed to
right.
go to a top eight regional. To me, I think NC State's firmly in the hosting race, if you ask me. South Carolina the same, and Duke as well. So it becomes tricky because all the teams that you would think would be obvious no-brainers to come here, they might host themselves.
Well, and they're not going to obviously put someone from the ACC as a two in an ACC hosting region. I mean, that's, you know, or same thing with the SEC. I mean, they're getting so many teams in, though. It's really crazy. Let me ask you a little bit nationally about LSU. What, how's that with that, with the payroll, how's that team not the top team overall in first place in the SEC? What's going on there?
Well, the defending national championship curse is real. The last two before them, Mississippi State and Ole Miss, not only did they miss the NCAA tournament the following year, they missed the SEC tournament. And right now, LSU is a game ahead of Missouri for the second to last spot. Bottom two missed the tournament. So LSU is in danger, but man, they have lineup. They have a good lineup. They have hitters, but they just don't have pitching. I mean, Thatcher Hurd came into the year as a Friday guy, and he's kind of flamed out. And, you know, they had Luke Holman, a transfer from Alabama. They had Gage Jump, a transfer from UCLA, who was injured last year. But they just haven't found the right rotation in the weekends. And I think that's been killer for them because against the ACC, if you're not on your game every weekend, they will out-hit you no matter how good your lineup is.
Let me ask you a little bit about Duke. You brought them up. Pirates will play them next Tuesday. Give us a little bit about the Blue Devils and what has led them to having such a stellar season to this point.
Yeah, coming into the year, I think Duke, it was just, you know, how good their top end pitchers are. You know, they have Jonathan Santucci, the ace of the rotation. He's really good. He's going to be a first round draft pick this year probably as well. But they have so many pitchers. Their bullpen, pretty much anybody they pull out, you know, you probably trust to get you out of a game in a clutch situation. And that's so valuable, not having just, you know, 5-6 guys, but they have probably 10 guys on their pitching staff that you probably fully trust. And coming into the year, I think offense was my big question, and they rebuilt their entire infield pretty much from the portal and through recruiting. And man, they might have some games where they win 4-2, but they're more than capable of putting up 14 runs and hitting 6 homers in a game. So they can do it in a lot of ways, but that's a team, it scares me in a postseason just because of the amount of pitchers they have, and I do think their offense is good enough.
You mentioned NC State, you mentioned North Carolina. How about Wake Forest? I think they're in the two range right now from everything I've seen, but they've got the pitching when healthy. They've got guys that can hit when healthy, and if they're healthy, it's a scary two seed.
Very scary, and I actually have Wake Forest hosting in my latest projections. I had them up as the 11 seed, just projecting what I think they're going to do.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, I mean, that's the preseason number one team for a reason. I mean, the talent on that team, their lineup when healthy, I think it maybe hasn't come together as they would hope, but they still have stars in that lineup. I mean, Nick Kurtz at first base, Seaver King, and it goes on from there, and they have guys. And Chase Burns has been exactly what they hoped they were getting in Chase Burns in their rotation. He's now on Friday nights, and he is lights out. He strikes everyone out. And, you know, Michael Massey, Josh Hartle, they've had their ups and downs. But still, if you get into a postseason situation, they have three guys where you trust – they probably trust to go out and start any game of a regional, whereas, you know, a team like ECU probably has two. So they are scary too, and I want nothing to do with them if they end up falling back down to that two range.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you a little bit about who do you have as the 11 you said you had? Who again?
Wake Forest.
Okay, so that could be ECU, Wake Forest in a super.
It was. Yeah.
Oh wow! You know, you got to win, but we're having fun with the projections here. So gosh. Right. And look, I mean, same thing with Georgia Tech. Clark LeClaire's a tough place to play. The jungle and all that, I get it. But Georgia Tech ain't going to be scared. Coastal ain't going to be scared rolling into here if that's that how it plays. And certainly Wake Forest would not be in a regional, super regional. So, right. But that ACC is murderer's row. I mean, I know the SEC stuff, but gosh, that ACC is unbelievably, it's hard to believe how deep it is. All right, Wags, where can people go to get your projections? How often are you updating them? Give us the lowdown on that.
Yeah, go to om3.com. You can search for my name specifically, and Jonathan Wagner on 3. You can see all my articles, my author page, or just follow me on Twitter, j_wag74. I do my Field of 64 projections once a week,
okay.
Every Monday usually.
All right.
Usually about once a weekend. Gets up, the polls drop Monday morning. I usually do it about lunchtime on Monday.
Okay.
So I write it up then, and I follow it out with articles on the hosting race, the bubble, and I do power rankings throughout the week, so you can find everything there. But, yeah, just go to on3.com, and you'll be able to find me.
What is the biggest lesson the sage Stephen Igo taught you?
Oh, man. He's taught me a lot. I mean, you know, I had a little bit of experience coming in, but, man, Igo's a dude. You know, he gave me a shot at Hoist of Colors, and he pretty much just let me have free rein on baseball. So I think my obsession with college baseball, and I do have an obsession with college baseball, I'm going to blame that all on Stephen Igo.
I blame everything on Igo. So
there you go.
Yeah, I learned that quick. Blame Igo. All right, Wags, good to talk to you. We'll get you back on here as the season starts to wind down, and we'll start retweeting and posting the projections since you're a friend of the show and a good East Carolina boy. So take care, buddy. Appreciate
Sounds
it.
Sounds good, man.
All right.
Yeah, appreciate it.
There he goes, Jonathan Wagner. All right, let's hit a break. We'll come back, wrap up the show for today, get you set for tomorrow and the rest of the week. This is the Patrick Johnson Show.
Conclusion of the show. It's the P-Man here on 94.3 The Game.
Dom and I were just talking about, how he took a final today. I'm not going to put your business on the streets.
You can say it. I mean,
three A's and a B?
Yeah.
For the semester?
Three A's and a B, only four classes. I was kind of a little bit ahead.
So I'll say this now because I'm old and I don't care. Got my my first semester, like a 1.0. I don't know if it was a 1.7 or a 1.9. It was one of the two.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I quickly figured, okay, if I want to stay here, I need to start studying.
You got to start trying at some point.
And not trying to make every social event.
And you went here, correct?
I did. I went to ECU and graduated. From ECU.
Graduated from ECU. That's
yes.
You know, you need to explain that part. But I see a lot of people in the first semester not doing too great either because they don't really balance out their social.
Well, and like when we came back for the Christmas break and we were saying, hey, where's so and so? Oh, he didn't make it.
Yeah. You know? Some people they don't really make it.
And so I figured if I wanted to stick around, so I ended up with like a 3-something GPA. I mean, I really like worked very hard.
That was great.
Yeah. And we were just talking about, Dom, the class was a tough class. He got the B in. We had biology. Now, there were some days I just didn't go to class.
It's tough to make everyone.
Yeah.
Man.
And so, but that biology class, I sat like on the second row and it was like it's like a 2-hour class, I think.
Oh, was it a lab? Was it a biology?
No, it wasn't
plus
a lab. It was
no.
Just a class. The lab was separate.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't affiliated with that. I think I took him in the same semester, but it wasn't the same professor or anything.
Yeah.
So I went to every single biology class, and I hate math and science. I'm terrible math and science.
Me too.
and I got a C, and my fat ass earned that C because I went to every single, and I studied and I worked. It was one of those, had I not, I probably would not have done very well.
I mean, sometimes that C is more rewarding than an easy A and some, you
nice
know.
Meaty part of the curve, as George Costanza said, a C student. Jags released Zay Jones today. They, of course, drafted Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU in the first round last Friday. And it's going to save them $4.5 million, they meaning being the Jaguars. Zay had 116 catches, 1,144 yards, 7 touchdowns in 2 seasons with Jacksonville. Career highs in 22 with 82 catches, 823 yards. Missed 8 games because of a knee injury from early in the season last season. And then last November was arrested and charged with misdemeanor domestic battery after an argument with the mother of a child allegedly resulted in injury to her neck. The state attorney's office announced in March that it would not pursue the charges against Zone and Zay Jones, and the case was dropped. So, he has that off of his plate now. So I would think he's 29, he's going to find somebody.
He'll go somewhere.
Yeah,
sure.
He'll land somewhere.
He was really good before Calvin Ridley came in. I mean, he had that wide receiver 2/3 role, and Calvin Ridley came in, and Evan Engram stepped up. It's hard for him to have a role on that team, and then, like you said, the whole injury and...
Had some off-the-field issues last year. Yeah. I mean, again, the charges dropped, but still, he had them. Had to deal with them. Drafted in the second round by the Bills. You had played for the Raiders, the Jags, and we'll see where he winds up. And where he may end up going, but not with Jacksonville. Not with Jacksonville. Big thanks to Jonathan Wagner today. That was fun. We'll get Wags back on as we start projecting things out. And Dom, make a note, we'll get on threes projections up every week.
Yep.
Every Monday.
Make a note. I help with Twitter a little bit, I think.
All right, get Pilkington on it.
Yeah, I'll get him on it.
Well, if you call it Pilkington doing his help, yes, I guess. I'm kidding. Kidding. I got to give Pilkington a hard time still. If you're just joining us, we will have on Monday in the studio Mike Houston, and a week from today, John Gilbert will be on the show as we lead you into the Duke baseball game. Big thanks to Wags, as we mentioned. Thanks to Dom Kasulke. We'll be back tomorrow. Patrick Johnson show for you here on 94.3 The Game. Back in the morning, as the Big Hen will be live from the legislature on Talk of the Town on 103.7 WTIB here locally. Have a great rest of your evening, everybody.